Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 30th of July, Anno Domini 2011, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff to use, something to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, because here we go.
Everyone always puts that sign right in the way.
Exactly in the way for me. Give us a call. The number is 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
It's one of those Einstein things. You don't memorize the number because it's written in front of you.
Exactly right. It's Google.
Yeah.
Facebook is going to pay hackers to find problems with its website, just so long as they report them to Facebook's security team first. The company is following Google and Mozilla in launching a web bug bounty program. For security-related bugs, cross-site scripting flaws, for example, the company will pay a base rate of $500. If they're truly significant flaws, Facebook will pay more, though the company executives won't say how much. In the past, we focused on name recognition by putting their name up on our page, sending swag out, and using this as an avenue for interviews and the recruiting process, said Alex Rice, Facebook's product security lead. We're extending that now to start paying out monetary rewards. On Friday, Facebook will launch a new white hat hacking portal where researchers can sign up for the program and report bugs. Many hackers go public with the software and website flaws they find to gain prestige. Finding an important bug on a widely used website such as Facebook can help make a journeyman hacker's career, and going to the press with the issue can make him or her famous. But talking about the issue before Facebook has had a chance to patch it can be risky for Facebook users. In recent years, other companies have started these bug bounties to encourage hackers to keep quiet about the problems they find until they are patched. Google pays between $500 and $3,133.70, depending on the severity of the flaw. Google started to pay for browser bugs in early 2010, and then in November it expanded the program to cover bugs in its web properties, too. Company executives say that keeping good relationships with the hacker community is very important. Facebook has sponsored high-profile parties at the DEF CON hacking conference for the past 2 years, and Facebook Chief Security Officer Joe Sullivan sees that meeting as a key place to recruit new talent and educate security staffers. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Facebook's bug bounty. Can't wait to start raking in that cash. If I find one, that would be nice, and I wouldn't know a software bug from my Aunt Fanny. So far, we have 29.
For Aunt Fanny?
14 of them, for 48% of them are for Aunt Fanny, yeah.
Yes.
You voted Aunt Fanny?
Heck yeah.
Heck yeah. I know you and Aunt Fanny are...
I know, we're tight.
Item for a
we're
while.
Tight, yeah.
Well, I know that you'll have more to say about this, so when you're done with taking the poll, check the yellow box underneath, click on Give Us Your Opinion. It will take you to another phenomenal website where you can enter your opinion. Yep. And then come on back and join us. In fact, you don't even have to go away because all you have to do is listen to the phone. And, of course, you can give us a call just like Eric did all the way from, am I reading this right, Gaithersburg, Maryland?
Very good. Perfect.
How do we spell Gaithersburg, do you think?
Gaithersburg.
Well, there's an S in there somewhere.
Yep, after the R, the first R.
Gaithersburg.
But it's with a U, not an E.
B-U-R-G.
Got it.
Perfect.
Perfect. Thank you. What can we do for you, Eric?
You now have a pushpin on the map.
There you go. I know. I was looking at those today. And Rockville, we're right next to Rockville, so you know where we're at.
There you go. And you'll have it as soon as I hit enter after your question. So what's the deal?
I actually have a two-part question, if I can get greedy. The first part is I have a desktop that had Vista on it, and I upgraded to Win 7 Pro, and they have a D drive in there. The question is that D drive updated also, or is it still like that recovery disk drive still back at Vista.
What's on that D drive?
Well, it's kind of like what comes with the computer. They have that old, that disk image drive.
Yeah, yeah. then that would be still Vista.
It's the original factory software.
Yep.
Okay, then what's the best way to actually make a recovery disk, I would say, or whatever? What's the best way to have a recovery of the current operating system?
Well, how did you upgrade your operating system?
I think I did a full install.
Well, one way you can do it is you can get like Ghost. And Ghost will, if you've got a system in a pristine state, say right now,
yes,
you got the programs, everything else you want, what you could do is get like a program like Ghost and create an image of that exact way your whole system is. Now, if something happens, say the hard drive goes south on you or anything else, you could then restore that, by putting that Ghost CD in, you could restore that image that you have off, say, on a separate hard drive, and it'll put it back to that point in time. All the drivers, all the programs, everything, because it's literally making a shrink wrap copy of your system at that point in time.
And there's also some
put it on a disk or put it on like a backup hard drive.
I put it on a backup hard drive, or burn it to a DVD.
Well, yeah, oftentimes it won't fit on a single DVD because of the sizes of the stuff. So and that's why people are using hard drives and backup.
Terabyte hard drives are so cheap nowadays.
Yeah.
Right, but even it depends on how big it's going to be. It's usually not more than if it's just your basic install. You could get yourself a 16 gig thumb drive too.
It would
fit on that just fine.
And there's also freeware and shareware programs, so you don't have to go to a commercial program.
Cloud it.
Right.
You make an image file and cloud it, yeah.
But it depends on how long that thing's been sitting around.
Of course, he doesn't want to cloud it.
Really,
only from the standpoint, because that's up on the network.
Right,
he doesn't have to set. You got to have it on an external hard drive.
Right. Put it on an external hard drive or a big CD, thumb drive, I mean. Yeah, flash drive. And have it in several different places.
Okay.
You know, put it on a DVD or maybe a Blu-ray DVD. If you've got one of those, it might actually fit on that. But have it in several different places because over time, all of those media deteriorate.
How often do you make disk images of your computer?
I don't. I back up all my data to several places at once every night.
Same here.
But I don't bother to back up the operating system because I'm just going to reinstall it anyway.
Okay.
Because what generally is going to happen is either there's a catastrophic failure or, you know, I use Linux, so there's no registry. But if something goes wrong with the registry, I really want a clean copy of that.
Yeah, it's usually safer to do a clean reinstall. It takes longer, but it's safer.
And so what I tend to do is I make sure that I have multiple copies of my install media.
And that's a key. Save the disks that come with you. Save your disks.
Well, how many times do we hear someone say, hey, I don't remember where those disks are? Well, then you're screwed.
Can I ask a follow-up question then?
Of course.
A segue into what you were just saying. I have a program that I don't have the disks for.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on another, I have a laptop that has a very specialized program that I don't have the disk for.
Mm-hmm.
Can I make a disk image? If I clean up essentially it's an XP Pro.
Yep.
If I clean everything up and mm-hmm. delete a lot of programs I don't want, so I'm down to just XP Pro plus this program, can I make a disk image of that and then load that on my desktop
as
a separate boot up drive?
Yes.
Probably, yeah. The danger in doing that is that you can't just copy a program. It has to be installed. It loads support files.
Well, that's why
he'd
have to use Ghost to create the image.
You have to actually create a disk image in that particular case.
And I don't know if creating the image will then allow him to do a separate partition.
It would only work on a equivalent computer with all the same drivers.
Right. The problem, and this is exactly what Steve was getting at. If you've built up XP, right,
mm-hmm.
and you go to back it up on something, that will work perfectly on that machine.
Because of the hardware.
But if you put it on a different machine, Windows likely will not have the correct drivers.
It won't like the motherboard. The motherboard right off the bat.
The motherboard, it won't like any of that other stuff, which is another reason that I don't bother to back up the operating system.
Okay.
But in terms of this program that you want to use, I would personally back everything up using Ghost in case you get the luxury of putting it back on that same machine. But I would also start looking for an equivalent program or buy the disks for that program.
Yeah, call the manufacturer and see about replacement disks.
Okay.
And then that also goes along lines with programs you download. If it's a regular shareware program, freeware program, you can usually download it again. But a lot of people are now doing electronic distribution. Digital River is one of the big companies where you actually buy a download. Yeah, for a few extra dollars, they'll also sell you a CD. But for that type of stuff you download, be real sure you back up those files so you can install it again if you need to.
One other thing that I'm going to put in there, and it's a word of caution because I had a client come in. When you do these backups, please put them in the paper sleeves. I had one client come in, hand me all their backups. There was like four CDs. They were all stacked on top of each other with a rubber band around them.
Yep.
There was a scratch in disc number 3.
Yep.
And trying to clean that out and get it to where I could read it was not easy. So, yeah,
When you buy that spindle of raw CDs, buy the box of CD sleeves right next to it.
Please,
yes. Just to keep them protected. In fact, I almost don't like the sleeves. I like the thin jewel cases. I know they cost more, but they feel a little more protective than just sleeves.
Yeah, but at least the sleeves are at least.
Here's the thing I don't understand, and I'm sorry, Eric. We've kind of walked away from you a little bit. I don't understand. Apparently, backups are not worth enough to you to buy good discs and jewel cases.
Yeah. Yep.
But it is worth enough to you to pay me my rate to fix it, which would take 10 times as long.
No one ever thinks of it that way.
No, they don't.
I do not have a problem with that.
They do, not until it happens.
Yep.
Well, not until they have it happen.
And then you tell them you can't recover it because it's too badly damaged. And,
Then it's your fault somehow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
It's somehow my fault that you couldn't spend the extra 50 cents to protect your...
We started on our service intake forms. We have a line that says, if your hard drive has failed, do you want us to try to recover the data? And we had a customer come in this week, and she checked no, but then in the notes she put try to save my photos. But you just said you didn't want me to try to save your data.
It's got
to
be one or the other.
Hey Eric, could you do us one favor down there?
Excuse me.
Do us one favor down there. Well, actually,
I always
two favors.
Promote you to everyone I know.
If you would, and if you got a local station down there, you know, hey, just tell them they might want to carry sound bites.
That's a good idea. I like that idea, too.
That's a great idea.
You could listen to us, you know, every day, every Saturday. We're here every Saturday, 50 weeks out of the year.
A lot about the computers. I just wanted to tell you, I just got a HP convertible tablet.
How do you like it?
With the Sandy Bridge processor, and I upgraded it to a 160-gigabyte SSD drive.
Uh-huh.
And the thing flies.
Yeah, I bet it does.
Well, tell you what, send it up here so we can do a little beta testing, and then maybe we'll get it back to you in a few months.
There you go.
And listen, did we answer your questions at all? I know you didn't like the answers.
I appreciate it. Nope, that is good.
All right. Thanks, Eric.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Have a good day, sir. Kind of cool.
And now on our map should be Gaithersburg, Maryland.
Yeah. Yeah, when he told me that, you sit there. All right. I'm trying to get it real quick because he was saying it so fast. That's the whole trouble, you know. I'm sitting there trying to block you guys out because you've got to keep talking. No, you guys got to keep talking. But, you know, I'm also trying. That's why sometimes if I hope folks understand that if I ask you to repeat it, it's not that I'm trying to be rude or anything else, but I literally am right near these guys. I have to sit there and talk low.
Yeah, right.
You don't have to. You can speak up so I can hear it because I got Nick and Steve. They got to keep going with the show so there's no dead air. So, you know, again, just a helpful reminder when you folks do call, which we encourage you to do at 966-5299 or toll-free 1-800-790-0415 at member-supported Jazz 90.1. And we should also put in there that if you got a question, I can bring it up here on the board. You can also text us. So if you don't happen to have your computer with you, you want to just
quick question fits in 140 characters.
Yeah, you can text us at 585-209-9010.
There you go. And as long as we're talking about that, we probably ought to talk about our that's all right. I do want to bring up the call map, though. That's at soundbites.org/map.
There doesn't seem to be a link anywhere for that.
There should be.
I went to the links page and couldn't find it. Went to the
I'll make sure there is. No, it's on the front page somewhere.
Went to the front page. There's nothing called map. There it is. Why? How come when I searched for it a minute ago, it didn't find it?
It's a
Mac.
It's magic.
You just now put it there.
Yeah. But if you go to soundbites.org/map, all lowercase, it'll bring up a map, our call log map, and you will find all the people who've called Soundbites. There's one or two mistakes still in the database, but there's thousands and thousands of entries in the database, so I haven't quite gotten to all of them yet.
Why not, slacker?
I am a slacker, I admit it.
Jeez.
And so,
what, you want a life, too?
Yep. Oddly, I do. You'll find us all over the United States, in Canada, and Hawaii, in Beijing.
Australia?
A couple places in Australia. We know there are listeners in Norway and the United Kingdom and
Iraq, Afghanistan.
None of you people are calling in. What the heck? Anyway, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. And we will be more than delighted to take your call. Now, Steve sent me an interesting item that Apple apparently has more cash on hand than the United States government.
Yeah, Apple has $76.2 billion in cash and marketable securities, so money in the bank, and basically.
Right.
The U.S. Treasury only has $73 billion.
That's right. On the other hand,
the U.S. spends $10 billion a day.
Right. So it would last just barely more than a week if Apple were to
Bail us out. Yeah.
But here's the thing. A lot of shareholders at Apple who are kind of angry at that number because they believe they should be
a dividend, yeah.
Either giving a dividend or buying back stock or whatever. They've put a lot of money into Apple, and they don't believe that their return on investment is as high as it could be when they've got that much money.
$400.
I understand that, but that's not the point. The point is not, am I making money? The point is, am I making enough money?
Yeah.
And the answer to that is always no.
A lot of times what Apple uses that cash for is securing production requirements. They just signed a deal with, I think it was Samsung, for $10 billion to guarantee the next 6 months of flash memory chips. Apparently, Apple is buying 90% of the flash memory chips in the world.
Yep.
And it's interesting to see.
It's one reason that my Asus Transformer Android tablet was late, because they use exactly the same screen.
Another statistic that came out was that Apple sells as many iPads in 2 weeks as Motorola sold tablets in the entire quarter.
Yeah, exactly. Well, one of the problems really that Apple has right now is that they're being thought of in certain communities as more a music company and tablet company than a computer company.
Yep.
And that is both good and bad depending on what it is you're looking for. Listen, we're going to take a break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites on Member Supported Jazz 90.1. Sorry, I like the music. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. You know, there's 100 different ways you can join us here. There's, of course, listening to us online. You can see us on Ustream. What's the name of the channel?
Soundbites Radio.
There you go. Was there an underscore in that?
Hyphens, I think.
Well, you make it difficult for folks.
Soundbites Radio. Yeah, make it hard. We are also on IRC, the Internet Relay Chat. There are two standard ways to join us. One is to go to the front page of Soundbites, and during the show, you will see a link to log right in. You can pick your own username or just use the random one that comes up and click the login button. If you have your own IRC client, which is available on computers and phones and pads and tablets and name it, then we're on FNET, E-F-N-E-T. And the name of the chat room is Soundbites, Pound or Octothorpe, whatever you want to call it. Soundbites, all one word, all lowercase. And you can join us there as well. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter. You can become our fan on Facebook. And every Sunday night from 6 to 9 p.m., 6 to whatever time, Linden time, which is 9 p.m. Eastern, we're in Second Life. So you can join us there. And that's how you get hold of us. In the meantime, we have another. This is a great story in the sense of terrible. AT&T is rumored to be changing its data plans once again, alongside the arrival of Apple's next iPhone, with the iPhone 5. Instead of slapping overage charges on data hogs, AT&T may switch to throttling data speeds instead. AT&T began limiting data use on June 2010, shortly before Apple launched the iPhone 4. New smartphone subscribers are currently limited to 2 gigabytes of data for $25 a month, plus $10 for each additional gigabyte. Throttled plans would presumably eliminate overage charges in exchange for slower speeds during the billing cycle in which the threshold is met, but it's not clear what those throttle speeds would be if this rumor pans out. The switch to throttling is reportedly set for the first week of October. This is the same week that AT&T is rumored to alter its insurance structure, suggesting that the iPhone 5 will be released around that time. Most rumors, however, peg the iPhone 5's arrival for September. What's more likely to happen is that it will be announced in September and generally available in October. We see that a lot. The throttling rumor is plausible. T-Mobile switched to throttling earlier this year. I beg your pardon. Wow. While Virgin Mobile will make the switch in October. If AT&T starts throttling, it'll follow an industry trend while giving itself an advantage over Verizon Wireless, whose new tiered data plan includes overage charges. AT&T could even be sneaky like T-Mobile and advertise unlimited data while relegating its throttling thresholds to the fine print. But if this happens, many people would welcome it as a step up from overage charges. Unlike voice minutes, which are fairly easy for consumers to quantify, data use is tricky. Most users can't estimate offhand how much data they use by streaming music or regularly checking email, so overage charges can seem predatory. Still, it wouldn't be surprising to see a switch to tethering accompanied by a price increase, say back to the $30 per month that AT&T used to charge for unlimited data. From what we've seen, wireless carriers rarely give something without taking something else away. So, capping or throttling, which do you prefer? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
We do have somebody that texts us a question, and here is the question. All right, I'm running Windows 7. I have an iPhone 3GS, and I just got an iPad 2. How do I sync my bookmarks from the phone to the iPad? KC in Rochester.
You go into iTunes on your computer and check the sync bookmarks box. And then it syncs your bookmarks between all your devices.
Really? It's that easy?
Yep.
How is that all going to work? Well, Kyle, you wouldn't know. I was about to say, how's that all going to work once you don't have to plug an iPad into it?
Well, that's part of the iCloud service that Apple is going to be offering this fall, is that you don't need your computer anymore to synchronize your devices. You can just sync through the cloud. So you buy an app on one device, the cloud knows it, and that app automatically comes on your other devices. Your bookmarks, your contacts, your calendars automatically sync through the cloud. A lot of people do that now through Google, using Google as a syncing tool between their devices.
I love Google and using that with my calendar. Oh!
Yep.
That is so sweet.
I'll tell you what. I bought a Chromebook, which, by the way, I absolutely love. I bought a Chromebook off Craigslist, believe it or not.
And a Chromebook is?
A Chromebook is a laptop that runs the Chrome operating system from Google. It's essentially just the Chrome browser. I get 8 hours of battery life, actually closer to 9 because I tested it over this week, and 3 days of standby mode. It's a dream little device. It's obviously not going to replace a full-blown desktop or laptop because everything you do is in the cloud. So if you're somewhere where there's no cloud, you don't have access. But that's fine for me. I knew what I was buying. I knew what I was getting into. When I started it up, it asked for my Google username and password, my Google account information. I put that in. The next thing I knew, everything was there, including the bookmarks I had synced from work.
Cool.
I brought it because the operating system comes up, and all of a sudden I'm looking at all these bookmarks and says, what the hell? They've already put in book. How did they put in my book? How did they put in my workbook? Wait a minute.
FM.
And then I remembered that I had backed them up to Google, to the cloud. So it's all my Google stuff. I can do Google Docs, Google Gmail, Google Plus all day long on that thing. It's got a camera and a microphone, so I've been in Hangouts. It the only thing is that the for my old ears, the speakers are kind of soft. But that's okay because it has an earphone jack.
It's called Age.
So it's called Age, and so I've got an earphone jack, so I listen with it. It's just the picture's crisp and clean. The camera picture's crisp and clean. The screen is gorgeous. I meant to bring it in today, and I didn't because I was out doing stuff, and I forgot to home and get it.
You can bring it in next week.
I'll bring it in next week. It's just a phenomenal device. Again, the problem is you have to have the web available to do anything with it.
And talk about, you know, using the newer technology, which I've finally come, you know, to a Droid system phone. Mm-hmm. It was so cool. I was over in this one part of town, and I had to come here to do my Thursday night show, but I wanted to pick up a sub. So I quick went to Navigate, said, Navigate to Subway Subs. Thought about it for a few minutes. Turns out there was a Subway in this little plaza a mile and a half away. It gave me the directions.
Which you never would have known about.
Yeah, it was tucked away in this place. I didn't know this was here. Quick ran in, got a sub. Bam, I got here in the studio plenty of time to do my show prep and everything else. And it was like, yes, thank you very much. I love it. I love it. I love it.
In the IRC chat, Chris Reich is a friend of the show. Chris Reich says, sure, Nick, F, it'll all work fine as long as Google is around. That's exactly right. And when Google isn't around anymore, I'll just put Ubuntu on it. I'm fine with all of that.
Either way.
It doesn't mean a thing to me, yeah. But I suspect Google will be around.
Google is going pretty darn strong because they're listening to people. They're offering some great products. Like I said, just the Google calendar I love because I can sit there on my full-blown PC, plug in things, or even on my phone, go to the calendar, plug them in, and they're in both places. And they remind me of certain events that are going on in that. And it's like, oh, shoot, I forgot that. I'm not forgetting things now because I'm putting everything in there.
Yep.
And it just reminds me.
And it'll remind you all day long. It's very, very cool. One of the things that, for example, this morning, the other morning, I'm working on some stuff. One of the things I'm doing is collaborating with a couple of other people on some documents, and I was able to, then we're keeping it in Google Docs. So although a couple of us are out of town, one of us is actually out of state.
He said thank you.
You're welcome. That was KC again?
Yes, KC said thank you.
And it's just very cool because we can all edit the documents simultaneously. Actually, the other day I was editing the documents and on Google Talk video.
Mm-hmm.
So we were talking to each other and doing stuff. Then we went to a Google Plus Hangout because all of them are on
Now,
Google
is that
Plus.
Like, just because I'm unfamiliar, the Google Talk, that's sort of like, what's the other one?
Skype. Skype.
Like Skype?
Yeah. It's one-to-one video chatting. It's also just text chatting if you'd rather do that.
Okay. Can you do groups?
No. You can do that in Google Plus, however. They have a thing called Hangouts. You can hang out with 9 other people.
Oh.
So for a total of 10.
So it's great for conferencing and everything else.
Oh, I've done that too. I was actually online with the guy who runs Android Swag, the website. And we had a bunch of people. And what's really cool about it is Google automatically, who's ever talking, comes up as the big picture in the middle, and the other 9 are
down below?
Thumbnails on down below. It's very, very well written, very well done. I'm, of course, on DSL, and it's not tremendously fast, but you know what? I had no trouble at all.
There were
a couple people who came through pixelated, but they were pixelated for everybody because I specifically asked that question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that me or is it them? That's them. That's their crappy cameras and not enough lighting or whatever.
It is what it is.
I get that. Exactly. Not a problem.
Hey, compared to where we were 20 years ago?
Well, that's exactly right. Five years ago, for God's sake. If you said to somebody, oh, by the way, I can let you video conference with up to 9 other people for free.
Mm-mm.
On a computer that cost you $200.
Ain't happening.
They would ask you to share whatever you're smoking.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's like, oh, yeah, so you're on a Chromebook with Google Plus. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. Why isn't everybody doing it?
Yeah.
It's more or less the word.
I went back and looked up, see you, see me. which was the original. First.
Oh, yes.
Original.
I remember using that.
1992 from Cornell University, the first video conferencing program.
Oh, man, did that not work well.
19 years ago.
Yeah.
I remember so many people complaining that they couldn't get online. The video was crappy. The audio was crappy.
Oh, yeah.
And I would say...
That was in the days of modems.
And I would say to you, mm-hmm. how fast is your modem? And they say, well, 14K.
All right. You'll get one frame per second.
Yeah, exactly. you're really, this isn't going to work for you. You need at least a 33K modem, a minimum of 33K modem. And even then, it's going to be semi-crappy.
What was interesting is it was video only for 2 years. And they added audio in 94.
Right.
Which was opposite. Most of the other chat programs, they started as text and then added video, audio, and then added video.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
What are they going to call it? See You Hear Me?
Yeah.
No.
Well, we used to talk about that in the day. I don't care if I can hear the pin drop. It's free on my computer.
That's right.
Oh, speaking of, I found another app that I love.
Here we go.
Because I'm a little hard of hearing in one ear, and I admit it.
And the other ear, you can't hear at all.
Yeah, really. So it's called Volume Booster.
Nice.
And it actually does increase, especially when I've got my Bluetooth in, because I do put that in the good ear. And I love it because it's so small. It just fits right in the ear. It actually did boost up the volume that I can even on the Bluetooth. I mean, the regular volume on the phones, I have no problem with it, but even if I put them on speaker. But when I'm on the Bluetooth, which I use a lot, I mean, some folks will sit there. Oh, one went to put throw my helmet on. All of a sudden, I feel something pinching in my ear. Oh, shoot, I forgot I had to take the helmet off, take the Bluetooth out, put it
now,
in my pocket.
Now, when are you going to buy the Bluetooth helmet?
No. No, that's one thing I got to admit. When I ride, the phone goes in my saddle. It goes in the back tour pack.
Good for you.
I do not have the phone on me.
Good for you.
And folks have said, well, I called you. Didn't you feel it ring or hear it? No, it's in the tour pack. I don't want anything to
feel
distracted.
Anything on a Harley.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah, you do.
Put it on vibrate. Sure wouldn't
know
the phone.
You got vibrating, but it's not from the phone.
Well, here's the thing.
And you don't want to ruin that.
I understand people. I can ignore my phone all day long. Let it ring. So if I'm driving and the phone rings, I just don't answer it.
Yep.
That's why God made Google Voice. It will answer the phone for me. I don't need to worry about it. I don't care about it. I would rather pay attention and get where I'm going alive and then see who I missed
the call
from.
That's why I say my phone is always in the tour pack. And folks say, they'll see my holster here on the thing. But the phone is, I got a separate compartment, and the phone gets dropped in there, and that's where it stays. And I'll be honest with you, sometimes I've even forgot that it's there, and I go off doing stuff, and it's like, like you say, I'll get to it later.
I'll get to it later.
The
phone is my feeling, the phone is a convenience for me, not for you.
Exactly.
I will use the phone when I want to use the phone, and if you don't like that, don't call me.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to Harleys a second, did you see American Restoration this week?
No.
Guy brought in a
TV shows do you actually follow?
A few. Thank goodness for DVRs. And you can skip through commercials. Or on demand is nice, too, because you don't have to skip through. But they did a 67 Harley moped.
Nice.
It weighed 100 pounds, and it's classified as a moped.
Nice.
And this 12-year-old girl rode it growing up, and her husband restored it for their anniversary.
You can hear this one?
Cool. Yeah, I can hear that one. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour for the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
I like my music better.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free at 1-800-790-0415, just like Larry did from Penfield, New York. Welcome, Larry. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I have an old, older Canon.
Everyone's having that trouble today.
Yeah, we're all having it. It's the weather.
I have an older Canon scanner, flatbed scanner, with a 25-pin parallel connector on it.
That is old.
Give up.
It still works fine. But I just bought a laptop. Guess what? Only
Windows 7?
Only Windows 7 on USB.
Yep.
And, of course, no 25-pin connector here.
They do make a converter, and I believe it is...
costs as much as a USB scanner would, though.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, you can get a...
Yeah, there's parallel to USB converters. But generally, they only work for
about 50 bucks,
and they only work with specific devices they're designed to work with.
And you can get a scanner for that.
Yeah.
So USB
these,
and faster.
These cables that you can get for printers that do the conversion won't work for the scanner?
Yeah, they're going to work,
sometimes.
But they're going to cost you more.
I saw one for $8 the other day.
Yeah, I wouldn't count on that working.
Well,
yeah.
if you're a gambler, go for it. It's only $8.
The other problem is you're not.
Don't be surprised if it doesn't work.
And the other problem is you're not going to find a parallel driver for the new computer.
And the other factor that you might have is even though he gets this cable, it might not work with Windows 7.
That's right.
The scanners, that was one of the biggest things was the downfall of Vista. Vista was so incompatible with so many devices, that's why they got rid of it. They couldn't get rid of that operating system fast enough to bring out Windows 7 that now was backwards compatible on quite a bit of stuff. But now you're talking about an old parallel scanner. That is quite old. And I won't, hold the...
And probably a new
feature of the fire on that one.
A new USB scanner would have higher quality and better speed too. Yeah.
So the bottom line is, it can't hurt to try it because it's only $8. But don't be surprised if you find yourself looking for a new scanner.
Yeah, I sort of figured the Windows 7 would be the bigger hang-up than the cable, but.
Yep. Well, but that's the point. The cable is available, but there may not be. It may not work under Windows 7 because there may not be a driver available.
Right. All right. Thank you very much.
Sorry.
Yeah, the only other thing that he could possibly do is go out and get a parallel card.
Not for a laptop.
Oh, yeah.
Unless it's a PC card slot.
Yeah. Right. Might work.
That's right. He did say laptop. I was thinking desktop.
Again, though, the problem is Windows 7.
And that's going to cost... And that card will probably cost more than a
scanner. Sometimes, on some of the programs in that, you can sit there and right-click on it and say, fake it out and sell it. Oh, it's Windows, XP.
Right. But that's still not necessarily going to load the driver for that.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
So, especially 64-bit.
Yeah.
That is even worse.
Yep.
If it was 32-bit, he'd have a chance. 64-bit, which I encourage everybody, go 64-bit. They're finally coming out with programs that take advantage of it. You're really, I don't want to say stupid, but, really naive in thinking that, oh, no, I'll stick with 32. No, 64. Things just run so much
more. You need
more
RAM. You need a better processor, but
it's worth it in the long run.
It's the future. By the way, the Humble Indie Bundle is back, humblebundle.com. Indie Bundle 3 is now available. Steve is going to put another link in the thing. It's Humble Indie Bundle 3. You get, like 7 games. And you pay what you want. Basically, you pay what you want. It's available for Windows, for Linux, and for the Mac. All the programs are available for all three. What reminded me of that is when you were talking about 64-bit, they actually had a 64-bit version of one of the games for Linux, so I was very impressed by that. I got them yesterday. I've gotten all of the Humble Bundles, all 4 of them, Humble Indie Bundles 1, 2, and 3, and then Frozen Bundle, which was in the middle of winter. This is Humble Indie Bundle 3 at humblebundle.org, and...
Excuse me.
Humblebundle.com. Pay what you want. Some of it goes to the developers. Some of it goes to charity, and you can pick how much goes to each. The games are fun, and actually, they made a nice little present for my daughter, actually.
Oh, cool. Nice.
What's particularly interesting is that you can, once you pay the money, you can download all the versions for all the programs for all the operating systems. There's no extra, and then of course
no extra fee.
You can also once you sign in, you get free access to Minecraft for the length of the bundle, whatever. However,
until August 14th.
I'm not a Minecraft player.
My son loves Minecraft. I got to pull out some of my old 8-bit games that we used to play 20 years ago.
Exactly.
when they were cool.
Well, I say
that's all a retro thing now.
I've got hooked on my my phone, playing with like about 8 different people. It's called Scrabble with Friends.
Words with Friends.
Words with Friends.
Because Scrabble is a trademark of some other company.
Words with Friends, and oh, it is a ball. I'm having more fun, like I say, and you know, it gets you thinking, and you know, keeps the mind going.
So you fake the friends, and you know the words.
I was reading about a Scrabble-like program. I forget which one it was. You could use an iPad as your Scrabble board.
Nice.
And each person used their own iPhone or iPod Touch as their tiles.
Nice.
And you flicked the tile off. I'm doing this for the camera. You flick your tile off your phone, and it lands on the iPad.
Nice.
And
then you got to rearrange. How do you arrange them?
Well, you flick them in the right order. You probably tell it where you want to start, and you flick your tiles, and they end up in the right order.
Okay. Cool. That works.
There's a whole lot of amazing stuff that's available for those things. But I have another news item.
Oh, well, pray tell. Tell us.
We depend on our computers to get work done, and so we try to safeguard them appropriately. At least some of us do. But our trusty laptops, desktops, and tablets rely on their own internal network of sophisticated computer chips to function. These tiny chips, called microcontrollers, regulate everything from the battery in your laptop to the headlights on your car, and they aren't always so secure. Microcontrollers have their own CPU and enough discrete memory to run simple programs, and although they're usually designed for a single task, they can be reprogrammed via updates to the device firmware. Typically, the hardware manufacturers deliver such downloadable updates to improve the performance of your device, but there's nothing stopping a hacker from mimicking those updates and injecting your device with malicious code. Thankfully, hackers such as Charlie Miller is a security researcher for Avant Labs, and he found that most modern laptop batteries are part of a smart battery system that relays information between the battery and the laptop's operating system to ensure the power is safely stored and discharged. If you've ever wondered how your laptop knows exactly how much time you have left before the battery dies, it's because of this system. Every laptop battery needs a microcontroller to relay information back and forth. That microcontroller needs to run firmware independently of the laptop. That firmware is accessible through the laptop, but is not affected if you wipe your laptop's memory or reinstall the operating system. Miller actually had a bunch of Macs. Laptops that he tested this stuff on, and the price for his experiments was a pile of dead Apple laptop batteries. This arrangement is a privacy breach waiting to happen. Malicious hackers with access to your laptop could load small spyware programs onto your battery chip, where they would run undetected by any antivirus software. You can inject malware from the battery into a laptop. You just need to find a vulnerability in the OS that would allow battery firmware to exchange code. It's even possible to execute a kind of denial-of-service attack on your laptop by hammering the operating system with fake code. Even wiping or replacing the hard drive wouldn't catch this type of malware. And since these chips regulate critical system functions, such as battery levels or charging speed, there's a potential for serious damage. I was able to make the battery lie to the computer about things like how charged it was or how hot it was, Miller said. If you change those variables, something really bad could happen. The big deal is that the Apple batteries that he used are from Texas Instruments, and they are password protected. The problem is that Apple hasn't been changing the default passwords that come from Texas Instruments. So it was child's play to reprogram. Miller reprogrammed his MacBook Air's battery using the default passwords obtained from Texas Instruments' website. So our question to you, and he bricked them. I mean, it would be easy to write a virus for any operating system that simply bricks your battery, which kills your laptop. And that's not all it can do. Like he said, it can also overheat your entire system because it could make the sensors lie to the operating system. So our question to you, worried about your laptop batteries and sensors? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
That's one thing we've been lucky, though, lately. And maybe I'm going to curse it. We haven't had a lot of battery recalls. They were literally overheating.
I'm still seeing batteries from the last recall that people never got replaced.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the massive recalls.
Yeah.
Knock on wood, we haven't been seeing it. I mean, that's a good thing, you know, with the technologies and everything else. They are improving them, folks. So, you know, when
we brought Amelia's laptop in, mm-hmm. there was a Steve noticed that the battery was bulging just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So we immediately replaced it. And
Apple actually published a tech note saying that that's normal in some cases for some batteries to sometimes swell at the end of their life.
Right.
Yeah.
But when they swell,
which is a very tiny
and I got,
whether
yes.
it's because
Swamp
it's at the end of its life
yep.
or it's about to go postal on you
yep.
or nuclear on you,
yeah.
When you see it starting to bulge a little bit, replace it.
Well, a lot of times what we see is the trackpad on and your mouse button quit working because the battery is swelling up from underneath, and most batteries are right under your trackpad on your laptop, and it prevents the button from clicking.
Right.
So we get a lot of people that say, my button doesn't work, and then you bring in their computer, and when you set the computer down on the desk, it rocks because the battery is swollen.
Talk about going
if
postal.
If the laptop is rocking,
yeah.
don't come knocking.
Don't come knocking. Get it replaced.
Talk about going postal. I almost did Tuesday.
Uh-oh.
Mm-hmm.
Should we save this for the next hour when we've got more time to talk about it?
Yeah, maybe we will.
Yeah, that's probably best.
Yeah, it was one of those Uncle Dave moments.
Uh-oh.
And it wasn't even with a computer. In a way it is. And I'll explain.
You've
got to listen to the second hour.
I was going to expand a bit on the battery firmware.
Yeah.
Wireless keyboards, wireless mice, yep. they all have the same type of firmware in it. And every now and then you may notice a firmware update from your manufacturer. People have figured out how to hack into that. And it's especially bad on a keyboard because you can put a keyboard logger in the firmware.
Mm-hmm.
And then it will capture everything you type.
Well,
fortunately, we haven't heard of any of those yet.
Well, that's true. Isn't that true of any Bluetooth keyboard? All you
yeah.
need to be able to do is eavesdrop because the Bluetooth...
During the connection, for a fraction of a second,
right.
during the Bluetooth pairing, it's vulnerable. But after that, it's all encrypted.
Well, but if you get in at that moment, you're
yeah,
in.
It sneaks yeah. in. I heard of one, though, that was actually trying to, and I don't know how successful they were. Hopefully, they weren't that great, where they were actually trying to speed up the processor so that, you know, it's kicking up the cycles so you wouldn't notice as much going on in the background.
Oh, that's very clever.
Because that's one of the things that is a giveaway of malware and viruses is your computer gets slow because
yep.
that virus is eating your cycles.
They're trying to get into where they can and kick up the processor speed, even if it's just a little bit. And then that way you don't notice it as much, and they're sitting there kicking back, like you say, eating up a lot of cycles, and you're just thinking, oh, well, yeah, my machine's a little slow. Not too bad.
Right, but what's interesting is I believe the number one question I get is, how come my machine is so slow?
Yeah.
And the answer is almost always, now it's time to dance the security tango.
Rootkits.
Sometimes it's you put Windows 7 in a 486. But mostly, I've read about some group of kids who took
mm-hmm.
a 486
mm-hmm.
and overclocked it to 3 gigahertz. And they did this.
How long did it last?
Swimming in liquid nitrogen or something like that?
They put it in a freezer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They put it in a freezer.
That'll do it.
And it lasted about an hour playing Quake.
Cool. Yeah.
Before it overheated so much that it actually
were they running
in the freezer burst into flame.
Were they running it from potato batteries? And
that would be cool.
Right. But that's you can overclock, but one of the things that you risk is overheating the system because systems are designed, nowadays in particular, they're designed to the minimum specification because that's cheaper. And when something is designed to the minimum specification, if you overclock something, you're probably overheating something and you're going to have a problem. And people tell me all the time, oh, I overclocked it a month ago and it's fine. Okay, now it's summer.
And now it's not fine.
Yeah.
Now it's not fine.
Everything works fine until it doesn't.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's one of the hardest questions we have to answer in the service field. Why did it happen?
It's like a light bulb. It'll burn out when you want.
Stuff happens, and this time it happened to you.
Sunspots.
Yep. Yep.
It's like my shirt. I was wearing my RTFM shirt. One girl took a look at it. What's that stand for? I just think about it. I work on computers and tell folks to read.
Read the fine manual.
Exactly. My Chromebook actually died. I can't say blue screen since it didn't blue screen. But I restored it. It's fine. And why did it happen? I don't know yet. I really don't know.
And you usually never know.
You usually never know. Yeah. But you know what? If it happens again, I got the restore flash drive sitting in the same case, so I should be all right. We are going to take a break. You have somehow squandered an hour of your life listening to us. I don't know what you were thinking, but whatever, well, you probably weren't thinking, but you get to keep your brain off for another hour, because we'll be right back with a whole nother hour of Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and for no discernible reason, you continue to listen to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the great, member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGN
Bytes on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. You know, you really should go check out Computer Link Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
They've clearly, clearly got the sharpest, best, and sexiest columnists around.
Why, are you there?
Yes. Yes, I am. Yes, I am. All right, our next caller is Sal from Fairport, New York.
I'm not going to touch that one.
Remind me to tell you about Brugger's today. Welcome, Sal. What's your question?
Hey guys. I didn't really have much of a question. It's just wondering your thoughts on the changes in all these tablets and phones with the patents being awarded to Apple on some of the touch technology they were awarded a week or two ago.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing. The Apple got awarded a whole bunch of patents, including which are some touch patents, and we'll see who they start suing first. What's happened a lot is that a bunch of other people have other patents. In fact, somebody, I forget, do I have a story about that? Yeah, actually, S3. It's a story I'll read after this phone call, but S3... has a bunch of patents that Macs infringe, and they're asking a judge to ban U.S. import of Macintoshes. Mm. So I think what we're going to see, there's also a group of people who think software and even some hardware patents should simply be disallowed, completely no patents of any sort for these kinds of things. And in many cases, I think they're right, because the simple act of touching a pad with two fingers was not created by Apple. They may have patented it, but there's prior art. And just because a judge didn't know about that prior art doesn't mean it didn't exist. So really, this is why God made lawyers, and we'll see what happens. But I think the whole idea, I expect better of Apple. I expect Apple to innovate, not legislate. Apparently, I'm wrong about that. But it's too bad. I have expected better of Apple. Sorry, go ahead, Steve.
I'll say even... without the concept of a patent, you still have the copyright involved, and a lot of times I sue for both issues. And it's frustrating that the patents were originally designed to encourage innovation so that you didn't do it the way someone else did, and we're getting too many what we call now patent trolls, where they'll buy a patent and then sue everyone that even vaguely infringes on it, and patents are given too broad a use, and it's really crazy what happens sometimes.
Yeah, well, I kind of thought it was pretty disingenuous of Schmidt to be on the board of Apple the whole time, you know, playing nice with Apple, and then short period later, after the iPhone was introduced, you know, coming out with Android and a very much similar type of technology and phone.
Well, but all of that has a lot to owe to the original
shape of the phone is the iPhone.
Yeah, but a phone is a phone, and it has, you know, function, form follows function. In addition, if you were to go back to the original HP, they didn't call it an iPad. They called it an iPack, I think it was called. And a couple of the others that came long before any of that stuff, you would find very similar things there as well. So Apple didn't invent a lot of the stuff they're using. They just patented it.
I don't know. On the phone front, they were the ones that formed that shape and the icon.
No, Sal, have you ever seen a phone?
Oh, absolutely.
There have been phones in that essential shape.
I saw the Windows, whatever, Windows C or whatever.
No. Going back 10 years, 15 years, there have been phones in that shape forever. Honest, Sal, I know that you're an Apple fanboy. I get that, and God bless you for that. But the reality is that the shape of the phone didn't come from Apple.
No.
I'm sorry.
Matter of fact, I think it may be floppy.
Didn't. I don't know what to tell you beyond that. It simply didn't. Phones have had that shape.
And they've improved on it a little, you know, the thinness and everything else on it.
They certainly improved on it. They innovated it.
Yes.
Innovation is different from invention.
Right. Totally.
George Selden invented the automobile. Henry Ford innovated it. And that's how that works. And I will give Apple the innovation award all day long. But they didn't invent a lot of the stuff that they're using. And you have to be able to understand the difference.
Oh, I totally understand it.
All right.
But we're not talking about, you know, it's not just a semi-rectangular type shape becomes the precursor to everything else, and anything similar to it becomes a copy. Now, we're talking about the specific shape even, never mind. It's a moot point.
Yeah, I can't give it to you that a rectangular phone or a phone.
No, I don't know
what you mean by the shape.
I'm talking about that specific shape. Curved corners, how many Samsung phones, how many Android phones, how many of all these?
I realize we're just going to keep arguing back and forth.
You know?
If you want to believe that Apple invented that shape, God bless you.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's just not, whatever. I don't, that's fine.
Okay.
That's fine. Thanks. All right. Thanks, Sal. That's fine. But we'll talk about patent infringement next. A trade agency judge.
Wait a minute. No, let's go back to you had a story about Brugger's. You said you had a story about Brugger's going to Brugger's?
Oh, yeah, I went to Brugger's today. I just needed to be out of the house, so I went to Brugger's for breakfast.
Share with us.
I just went to Brugger's for breakfast, and it was actually kind of funny. I was at the one on Monterey Avenue, and I had my Nook Color with me, and it engendered a number of conversations with people who wanted to. And it was very funny because the other day I went with some friends to Sodom, the Korean restaurant, very, very nice food. And there was a lady sitting there, and they were kind of laughing because she had her phone in one hand and her Nook Color in the other hand, and she was kind of. It was hard to tell which one she was actually looking at more, and they were kind of laughing at her. At one point today, I was sitting there checking my phone to see what time it was because I had to leave, and I had been reading, and I suddenly realized, I'm that woman doing the same thing. But a number of people came up and were very interested in the Nook Color. They wanted to know if you could get on the web with it, which, of course, you can, and a bunch of other stuff. And then as I was leaving, there were these two lovely young things standing at the place where you get the napkins and stuff. They were looking at the wall, and they suddenly realized that I'm on the wall. They have a photo wall at Brugger's, and I'm on it. And they said, how did you get on that wall? And I said, pure, unadulterated sex appeal. Which I then had to follow up with, which doesn't explain why you two ladies aren't also on the wall. But
was it the solar panel?
It was the solar panel. The big thing, I used to call it a reverse mohawk, but now, just to make Dave happy, it's a solar panel for a sex machine. Yeah. But we did chit-chat about the fact that I do a radio show and a TV show and a newspaper column and all the other stuff that I do. And it keeps me sane and keeps me grounded to realize there are people in the world who have absolutely no idea what we do and who we are. And that's perfectly fine. That's perfect. Although there was another guy who really just came up and said, wow, I watch you. I listen to you. It's great. Blah, blah, blah. Love your shows. Yada, yada, yada. So, but it keeps me grounded to hear that there are people who just don't have any idea who we are. It keeps me from getting a swelled head about the whole thing. So, yeah, that was my Brugger story. But it really just started out mainly with a bunch of people who seemed real interested in an e-reader. You know, it was kind of actually tough to just sit and read and eat. I'm reading the Barsoom series again. There was an ad. We went to see Captain America, and there was an ad for John Carter of Mars. So, of course, I had to read it again.
Yeah.
And I finished John Carter of Mars. I'm now on Gods of Mars. Great stuff. When I was a kid, I was pretty sick for a while. And my father, God love him, went to the store. I had no idea what a 10-year-old boy would want to read. Mm-hmm. But he picked up Doc Savage,
ooh,
Tarzan, The Shadow, and John Carter of Mars, a bunch of each, because they were all available in those days
for
a dime. Yeah, yeah. They're full books. They're hundreds of pages, but they were paperbacks, and they were a dime. And so he just brought me home a couple of dollars worth of these things. And they were exactly the right stuff. I lived on Barsoom with John Carter and Deja Thoris.
Cool.
I followed Tarzan and Jane. I was an agent of the Shadow. I was one of Doc Savage's Fabulous Five. I was exactly the right age. Yep. I was exactly the right age to learn those. And now seeing that ad for John Carter of Mars just kind of brought all that back up again. Because, you know, I read every one of those I could get my hands on. And so now I'm rereading them. There were 11 in the series. And I went on, of course, to read his Mucker series and the
Brain fart.
Pellucidar. The Interior of the Earth series. Can't remember exactly how it's pronounced. And it was just great stuff. And I'm rereading those again. And they're just lots and lots of fun. All right. Our next caller is Victor from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Victor. What's your question?
I have a question on Wi-Fi. We're thinking of getting a laptop that's going to be Wi-Fi enabled. And my question is, how close to a signal do you have to be? Is it like 500 feet, 100 feet, quarter mile? I mean, I have no idea.
It depends on the size of the antenna on the transmitter.
And where it's located.
Most of the standard home-based Wi-Fi routers go about 100 feet. Some of the N routers or some high-power routers where you can get up to 300 feet. With the right antenna, the record is 118 miles, and then they ran into a curvature of the Earth problem.
Set, by the way, by one of my ex-students at RIT.
Yep.
Woohoo!
But, yeah, it also depends a lot on what's in between you and the router.
Yeah, it's line of sight. Anything in between you will...
It's in the basement, second floor, all
right. If you've got ducts in between or a refrigerator or a microwave, that cuts down a lot. But certainly within your house, say, 100 yards, 100 meters, I guess, is generally okay. So, for example, in my house, unfortunately, my house... Well, fortunately for me, my house was built in the 1800s, and one of the problems that I have is that there's chicken wire in a lot of the walls because mm-hmm. they're all very nice walls, which means every room is a Faraday cage.
Yeah.
So getting a signal, for example,
don't happen.
I can get a signal in the backyard fine, on the porch not so much.
Basements are also a bad problem because of all the ductwork and the I-beams, the furnace, but unfortunately that's where a lot of cable and telephone installations come into your house, and so that's the most obvious place to put your Wi-Fi base station.
I think I explained my question wrong. My in-laws have a summer home in Worcester, Massachusetts, and part of the city is Wi-Fi enabled. And what we're going to do is use the laptop in the city. What I did was I emailed them, and they said that where they live is not anywhere near a Wi-Fi cafe or whatever you call it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was talking about. I mean, how far away do we have to be from a signal like that?
About 100 feet.
Oh, that's it? Okay. Not a whole lot.
No, it's not a whole lot, and it depends... What you really do is want to check out the city's coverage map. Almost every city that is savvy enough to have municipal Wi-Fi also has a coverage map available. For example, Rochester has a coverage map, and I'm about a 32nd of an inch from the edge of where their coverage ends. You should be able to see that Wi-Fi coverage map. Okay. And it may extend farther than you think.
That information is available online, you think?
Well, I suspect it would be. I mean, the reality is if they're savvy enough to put up municipal Wi-Fi, they should be savvy enough to put a coverage map somewhere on the city's website.
A lot of times it's in partnership with a local ISP. Here in Rochester, Frontier is doing the city Wi-Fi. It's not free. It's an extra $10 a month on top of your Frontier bill, for your Frontier internet bill. But they have a map on the Frontier website, which you should also be on the Rochester City Government website as well.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yep, good luck.
I know the city of Canandaigua has got Wi-Fi, so pretty much down 332 through the center of town. Yeah, right down Chestnut Street and Monroe Ave, just past where Nick lives.
Yeah, right, exactly. One of the things that you can do is WarDrive. Not real WarDriving, of course. That's illegal. But you can set up on your laptop or on your tablet or on your phone programs that will tell you what Wi-Fi is in the area and what the signal is. And if you drive around and have a friend look at the screen, you can essentially map out where Wi-Fi is in the area. Depending on the program you use, it'll tell you whether or not it's an open Wi-Fi or not. But you can do that. That's the thing Google got into trouble doing. But you can do that if you don't actually use a Wi-Fi that you're not authorized to use. It's not illegal to know it's there. So you can do that. So if you get the if you really want to know how to do that, there are ways to figure that out.
And it's amazing how many folks still leave their Wi-Fi wide open.
I know.
Some of it, too, is plausible deniability. So when you do something illegal and the police show up at your house, wouldn't me. My Wi-Fi's open.
We do not condone.
Yep.
Steve Ray. We look forward to your email.
You'll still get arrested. All of your equipment will still be confiscated. They'll still search through everything you've got.
And if they find anything, then there is no plausible deniability.
Yeah.
A trade agency judge has ruled that some... No? No time? Really? Apparently there's no time for that. All right, we'll hold that off. In the meantime, we'll take a quick break while I learn to read a clock. apparently it may or may not be somewhere close to 19 minutes after the hour. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you... we are the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites on the great member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. I want to read this. I'm going to
tell my story.
And then you can tell your story. Oh. I'm going to read this. A trade agency judge has ruled that some Macs infringe patents held by S3 Graphics and could be barred from the U.S., according to a decision made public Wednesday. But the U.S. International Trade Commission, the ITC, Judge James Gildea, also ruled that the iPhone, iPad, and iPad Touch do not infringe the S3 patents. If the full six-member commission upholds Gildea's decision, the ITC could block imports of Macs that were not equipped with graphics processors made by NVIDIA. NVIDIA-equipped Macs apparently are immune to the patent challenge. So we'll be seeing a lot more NVIDIA Macs coming out of Apple. An implied license in the doctrine of patent exhaustion apply to those Mac OS X devices incorporating the NVIDIA GPU that are protected by the NVIDIA license, ruled Gildea. Patent exhaustion means that because S3 had previously granted a license to NVIDIA, it cannot claim infringement against Apple, who is NVIDIA's customer. Macs that rely on other companies' graphics processors, such as those sold by Intel and AMD, may be at risk to an importation ban. Most models of Apple's notebooks and desktop lines now include graphics chipset produced by Intel and AMD, which includes the MacBook Air, the MacBook Pro, the iMac, which apparently they don't make anymore, and the Mac Mini. While Gildea ruled that two of the four patents S3 originally cited are not infringed by Mac systems, none are violated by Apple's iOS lineup of iPhone, iPad, and iPod Touch. The ITC case, which actually is good news for Apple since that's where they make like 99.9% of their money now. The ITC case, they could actually stop selling Macs entirely and still be an incredibly viable company. The ITC case between S3 and Apple, and they may be looking at that with this new thing where they don't have to connect to a Mac to get the iPad up and running. The ITC case between S3 and Apple is important. Most analysts have agreed because Taiwanese smartphone maker HTC announced 3 weeks ago that it would pay $300 million to acquire S3. The deal, however, is subject to regulatory approval and has not been finalized. HTC and Apple are locked in a patent battle of their own. A different ITC judge ruled earlier this month that the former's Android phones violate a pair of Apple patents. On the same day that Gildea ruled that Macs infringed two S3 patents, the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office found the same claims were not patentable. The ITC, this is why God made lawyers. The ITC was not able to take into account when Gildea ruled, because that's the way law works. So are you worried about patents and Apple? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. But don't call yet because...
Well, let me comment. I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, go ahead.
You should.
What's interesting with the Apple products is they alternate their graphic vendors pretty much every model. And almost all of the current models use AMD graphics. Almost all the previous models used ATI. They switched back and forth. Well, AMD bought ATI. So they switch between AMD and NVIDIA. So the current ones are using AMD. The next ones may use the NVIDIA again. So it's interesting to see that by the time lawsuits are filed and judged and what happens, you know, at the end.
Yep, yep. But this is bad news. If this goes through, it's kind of bad news for Intel and AMD.
Yeah.
In terms of their graphic chip sales. All right, now... All right, kiddies, it's that time once again. Get on your footy jammies, grab a mug of hot cocoa, and sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair, because we're finally just going to slap him awake, whether he likes it or not. It's at last time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave?
Oh, yeah. Dave. Hey, it's been a long time.
It has been. Welcome back, Uncle Dave.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, all right, we've been talking about how much technology has advanced, changed, and there's just a wealth of information out there, and even that you've got to sometimes protect it.
You might. Right. You think?
All right. I really got porked off. I finally went ahead and made an appointment for my passport.
Oh, here we go.
I went and got all the paperwork. I got my driver's license front and back, and I made sure that I had a birth certificate with a race seal, and the forms are all filled out. Matter of fact, I even made a mistake on one. I printed off another form, made sure everything was correct. They could read each letter. I mean, it was very neat. I didn't want to have any screw-ups because, you know, I've heard them, oh, bouncing it back and everything else. So I was prepared. I had an appointment at the post office. Almost went postal. I go in. I'm here for my passport. She takes one look at it. She goes, sorry, I can't accept this. I go, what? My passport, you know, my birth certificate's on the top. She goes, we can't accept these birth certificates anymore. I go, wait a minute. It's got a race seal on it. You ready for this?
Probably not, no.
You definitely, the folks in our legislature in New York State have too much time. They definitely have too much time on their hands that now they require you, just so they can get more money out of you,
yeah,
turn around and say, no, it's now got to have your parents' name on it. I go, what? I had to turn around, leave the post office, go over to Westfall Road, Vital Statistics, go in there. I fill out a form that just says my name, social security number. They're able to pull up a whole new birth certificate with my parents' name on it. It's already in there. It had it. It's Elizabeth Enright or Elizabeth Byron and blah, blah, blah.
You usually have to get that from Albany, and it takes 3 weeks.
No, you can go in there, but they want $30.
Yeah. Of course they do.
So I had to get another one with a race seal, but the only difference is my parents' name on it. I felt like saying, wait a minute, my very original birth certificate from 1948 has my parents' names on it. It didn't have the race seal. I'm wondering if I can just take that, slap it with the yellow one that I had with the race seal, and call it even.
Yep.
Nope, they want $30.
Unbelievable.
So I had to turn around, and I thought, oh, here goes something. It was going to be very easy. Had to drive all the way over there, stand in line,
get another birth certificate for $30, turn around, go all the way back to the post office, and I got it. And the young lady, luckily the young lady says, "No, no problem." She did. It's there, sweetheart, over there at Waring Road. God bless them. The lady took me right on in, and I said, "Thank you very much. I appreciate it." She goes, "Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, they just changed it as of April 1st, and they haven't let too many folks know it. And they should make it a little more clearer on the website." But that's, again, New York State sitting there tripping people up. You get all the way there, and now it's got to have both the race seal and your parents' name on it. But I got it back there, and I had my photo taken, got it in, so I can, you know, have the passport if I want to go over to Canada and that type of stuff, because I haven't been able to go over with some of my friends. My friends like going over there for Friday the 13th, or, you know, just going over there riding. And I haven't been able to go, and I'm just starting to get back into riding again, and I'd like to be able to go with them. And
so this means next time you're off, you're not just necessarily one step ahead of the law.
No, I'm over in Canada.
In the West. You could be in the Great Northwest.
Yeah, I'm fleeing the government.
There you go.
One step ahead of the law.
One step ahead of the law in the Great Northwest.
Yep, yeah, I'm a motorcycle.
That's the way it is. I tell you what, there's look, I get it. New York State is out of money.
Yeah,
I do get it.
But why don't they learn like the rest of us? You and I and Steve, we sit here. We got a budget. We know how much we're earning.
Yeah.
You don't spend any more than that.
Yeah.
Because you can't.
Because we're not a government. We're not a government. Same thing is happening with the federal government. The only part that really scares me about that is that we're not taking it seriously. We as a nation.
Oh, no, we're not.
We're not taking it seriously.
We keep selling it out to China.
Well, and that's the problem. They're making noise that they want some of it back now. They want their money back. And if they can't get their money, they're going to take the collateral, which is land in America. And there's nothing we can do to stop that if we're going to maintain our standing among the international community.
Yep.
So,
and the thing of it is, though, is in some of the products coming over from China are like the old days of Japan. You know, back in my day when I was growing up in the 50s, you know, if something came from Japan, it was known as cheap stuff.
Yeah, made in Japan was cheap.
Yeah. Yep. Now it's China. You know, they don't really inspect things. There's lead in stuff. And they don't care because, you know, the quality isn't there like Japan. Now, I mean, you get something from Japan, it's like, whoa. Yeah. Especially electronics and everything else, it's better than what we do sometimes.
Yep.
So, you know, they're...
Well, in fact...
they learned.
Yeah, take a look at your iPad. You know, it may be sold by an American company, but I don't... Other than maybe... Do iPads have Gorilla Glass now?
I don't think it's the Gorilla brand glass.
Right. So, essentially nothing in there actually comes from America.
Yeah.
You know, it's,
and our cars, they're coming from either Canada or most of them are coming from Mexico.
Right.
My HHR was all built and assembled in...
I had a big argument with somebody the other day.
Mexico.
Because I own a Nissan Cube.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying, you know, you should buy American. I said, look, he had a Ford. Your car was made in Vancouver. My car was made in Tennessee.
Yep.
You know, who's got the American car?
Bingo.
I'm paying American workers to make my car. Mm-hmm. You're paying Canadian workers to make your car.
Yeah.
I don't care what else you say. That's the bottom line for me.
Yeah, mine is, like I say, assembled net in Mexico.
Yep. Yep. So it's, you know, we're a universal country now.
That's,
you know,
one thing
Well, it's the North American free trade, so Mexico and Canada count as we're all North America.
Right.
And again, I won't mention the dealership, but when I bought my HHR, I said, so where's it coming out of? The South. They can't say Mexico.
Right.
So I looked it up, where they're assembled. So the next time I called, I said, so when's it coming out of Mexico? We're not allowed to say that, but it's due in.
It's real far south.
Yeah.
Yeah, really.
Wait, and I found the city.
It's so far south, we call it Sud.
That was, what was that? That goes back to how the states got their shapes again. That they talked about the Mormon exodus from upstate New York. And they went to Mexico to set up their community. And then, like, 10 years later, suddenly they were back in the U.S. again because that part of the territory got annexed from Mexico and became the U.S. again.
Yep. It is amazing to see, and well, you know, they gerrymandered the state shapes just like they gerrymander the legislative district shapes.
I still say we should get Long Island to Jersey.
There's a lot of not give it to Jersey, but Long Island could become a separate state.
Well, no, what we got to do is, you know where it's,
Manhattan.
You know where New York State goes from, say, Erie, you know, straight across, and then it dips down. We just continue the line straight across, and that lower part becomes its own state.
You know what really makes
me crazy? Our taxes would be cut.
When I lived in New York City, somebody would say, "Oh, I'm from upstate, Westchester."
Yeah,
upstate. No, Hudson, New York is farther north than Westchester, and it's not upstate.
Yeah.
Albany is not upstate. Upstate is Rochester. Upstate is Watertown.
Yep. Yep.
Upstate is Plattsburgh. Mm. Upstate is not Westchester.
I like watching episodes of Law and Order where they're interviewing a prisoner in Attica, and they run to Attica two or three times in one day.
Yeah,
yes. Yeah, we're just going to go up to Attica.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was reading a novel, but luckily it was by Ed Hock, who's a local... a mystery writer, and he had the times right. You know, if people were leaving from Rochester to go to Batavia, or Rochester to go to Ithaca, or Rochester to go to to Buffalo, it actually took that long to get there, not like some magic Star Trek transport where you leave New York City and suddenly you're in Attica.
Yeah.
There was, I'll do that when I'm watching TV shows. There was one that takes place in Texas, and they go from Houston to Austin to this town to that town all in one day. So, and I'm plotting it on the iPad, you know, add direction, add destination, add destination, add destination. You know, and they traveled like 2,000 miles, and it would take, you know, 6 days to do that.
Yep, yep.
And they did it in one episode in the space of one, maybe 2 days.
I did that actually with an NCIS. I don't care how fast Gibbs drives, he wasn't going to do that in that amount of time.
Gibbs is good, though.
Gibbs is good. You can't
I love that program.
I love that show, too.
Yesterday, up there with Deadliest Catch.
Yeah, me too. I like that, too. Yesterday, I was homesick. I had an ear infection, and I was home for a couple of days. And yesterday, I had the TV on. I was watching NCIS on Sleuth, I guess. And then, you know, they ran three or four of them in a row, and then I was switching the channels, and there was NCIS on USA. Yep. The USA.
You know your show's a hit when it's on 16 channels at the same time.
And I looked at the schedule, and I could have watched NCIS
all day
from 10 in the morning to 10 at night.
Yep.
It was on for that. And I thought to myself, exactly what I thought is that is a popular program. That is definitely
I like the one with Ziva. I don't like it with the other girl. I like the newer ones with Ziva.
She's on Rizzoli and somebody now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's on a new series now, Sasha Alexander.
She's good.
Yeah, she's very good. She's very good.
Does that mean she's not going to be on NCIS?
What, no, Ziva is Cote de Pablo. Sasha Alexander was the first girl.
Oh, okay,
The first girl.
The one that got shot in the head.
Yeah, she got killed by Ziva's brother.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Everybody got killed by Ziva's brother in the first three seasons.
Yeah, she got shot in the head.
Yeah.
And she had dodged one bullet.
Yep. And she got another.
I think Rocky Carroll is too young to be the director of NCIS.
That's true. That's true. The show is really
good.
Although
he is 48. He doesn't look 48.
No, he doesn't. It's a good show. It's a good series. I really like the writing.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the writing.
Yep.
I like the Abby.
Abby.
Abby is so cool.
My daughter is having a problem now.
She doesn't really have the tattoos, though, you know.
Well, no, Amelia's not going to have tattoos. She's smart about that. She's an actress. She has some of them.
Polly Perrette.
She has some of them.
Yeah.
But Amelia's not going to have tattoos. She's very smart about that. She knows that until you're an Angelina Jolie style actor, tattoos can stop you from getting a job. She understands that. But my daughter is having a problem, right? Well, you're not going to be acting anytime soon, so you don't care.
You don't want to see my back.
Yeah, I don't. But she has trouble now. She doesn't know whether her role model should be Abby from NCIS or Claudia from Warehouse 13. Both really smart, really sassy, geeky girls.
Yeah.
She's just not sure which one she wants to follow
Mix them together.
That's what I told her. She could be Clabby or Audia. Or I guess another... particularly not Clabby.
I want a Tesla and a Farnsworth.
Anything by Tesla and certainly anything by Farnsworth would be good. We are going to take another break here on this edition of Television Today. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Roger Ebert, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour, and if you'd like to talk to us about computers, please, please give us a call and get us back on track. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
I've had a couple of folks asking. The guy that I'm playing, his name is BD Lenz, and he is going to be, as a matter of fact, in Oswego tomorrow from 4 to 5:30. He'll be playing. So, I've had a number of folks like the CD, the music that I'm playing.
You've been playing him for a while. He's got good stuff.
Yeah, he's got a lot of good stuff, and if you want to catch him, he is over in Oswego. You know, and he's in our library.
And he's good.
Yeah.
A lot of good local-ish music.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. You can go around town, and whether it's jazz, blues, I mean, we do have the club calendar. If you're curious of what's playing, you know, around, check out our club calendar and see what's going on, because there are a lot of great spots around town that you can find some great music, outdoor music, I mean, throughout the whole summer and winter. I mean, it doesn't stop. Just because, you know, all of a sudden summer's over, there's a lot of places like Loving Cup and all these other places, Little Theater, that have music all the time. Our own Gapman Joan is usually playing over at...
And unusual for a radio station, we have live concerts.
Yeah, yes, as a matter of fact, the fall lineup has already been announced for our concert series, where the actual band comes in. And again, you can check this out at www.jazz901.org, and you can see our whole lineup of live artists that will come here in our studio and usually do an hour concert. This is live. It's not pre-recorded or anything else. You can literally hear maybe your artist. I think they were going to try to get the White Hots back in. I'm not sure if they're going to do that.
Wouldn't that be cool?
But they're another local group that is fantastic. I've played them on my show. So, check it out. I mean, there's a lot of great stuff out there.
Yeah. Microsoft has released, for you Mac people, an updated version of Communicator for the Mac that works with Apple's new Lion operating system. Communicator for Mac 2011, version 13.1.2. Is it mandatory that you have those kind of version numbers on a Mac? Is it?
We're the only ones to talk about them. The Windows has even longer version numbers, but no one says anything about them.
It was released Thursday to Microsoft's download site and will be pushed to users via the company's update service shortly, according to a Microsoft product director. The new version of Communicator resolves the crash bug that afflicted the program when users tried to run it on Mac OS 10.10.7, the new operating system Apple launched July 20th, or as you know it, Lion, because you're a human. Communicator is the corporate version of Microsoft's consumer-grade Messenger chat client for the Mac and is available only to business and academic volume licensing customers. It's also the software that connects Mac users to Microsoft's enterprise communication server software, Link 2010. Last week, Microsoft's Office for Mac development team reported several problems with the 2011 and 2008 versions of the suite when run on Lion. At the time, the Communicator crash bug and a glitch that prevented users from importing messages from Apple's Mail email client into Outlook 2011 or Entourage 2008 were the top two issues spelled out then by Pat Fox, the senior director of product development. In a blog published Thursday, Fox announced the availability of Communicator 13.1.2 and reiterated that Office for Mac 2004 does not work, nor never will work, on Lion because the suite was written for the PowerPC CPU. With Lion, Apple dropped support for Rosetta, the emulator that allowed PowerPC programs to run on Intel processor-equipped Macs. Microsoft has remained mum on a timetable for other Office 2011 fixes, including one for the Mail to Outlook bug and several minor problems with Excel, PowerPoint, and Word. Fox also told customers that they'll have to wait for Microsoft to support new Lion features, such as auto-save, document versioning in a full-screen mode in Office for Mac 2011. I don't understand what auto-save has to do with Lion. It should be built into the document. Oh, it doesn't matter.
Lion does it differently.
Doesn't mean that they have to do it that way.
Lion has versioning built into it. So if Microsoft was doing a custom autosave, it may not work
Document
auto-save.
Versioning, but they call that out separately.
Yeah.
It says autosave document versioning in full screen mode. I can't answer when those will be available, but it's likely measured in months, not days, said Fox. Communicator 13.1.2 can be downloaded from Microsoft's website. Happy with Microsoft's OS 10 offerings? Give us a call, 585-5. 966 Jazz. That's 966-5299, or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
We're seeing in the Mac community a lot of the uproar that the Windows community saw with Vista. Programs don't work on the new operating system. Slightly different reasons with the switch in CPUs 6 years ago. And that's part of it.
Six years ago.
So software people haven't updated in 5 or 6 years.
Well, they didn't have to because Rosetta Stone let them not.
Well, yeah, right.
Not and Rosetta Stone, just Rosetta,
just
right?
Just Rosetta, yeah. And actually, I read someone had a question about that. Does that mean Rosetta Stone doesn't work? No, Rosetta Stone is a translation language learning program, completely different than the Rosetta technology. Both based after named after the city of Rosetta, which was where they found a stone.
They found a stone.
I remember reading that a couple of years ago, and it never occurred to me the Rosetta Stone was named because it was found in Rosetta. I always thought Rosetta meant something. No, it's the name of the city.
It's just where they found it.
Where they found it, yeah. So it's
like the Leaning Tower of Pisa is not in Venice.
Yeah.
As a hint.
Yeah. So the Rosetta technology was a transitional technology to give you time to upgrade your old software. And they gave you 6 years.
I got to say, that's generous.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that's long enough.
But you still get folks complaining.
Yeah.
Yep. My 12-year-old Mac Tower G5 thingy, it can't be updated. That's exactly right.
Yes.
That is exactly right.
That brings a point. Dave, do you have any SCSI hard drives in like the 80 meg range?
In my dreams.
We had a customer bring in a 20-year-old Mac, and she wants it working again, you know, for a nostalgic reason. I can't find SCSI hard drives that you know, I want to pay anything for. The museum pieces now, I guess.
Yeah, doorstops.
Yeah, I found a 500 meg drive, but it didn't work in the computer because it was too
big. The BIOS won't probably handle it.
Yeah, it was too big, 500 megs.
Is it a desktop?
At the time it was.
Is it that little cube?
It's the all-in-one.
Yeah, that little cube?
No, it's before the cube.
No. I mean that one with the monitor and everything else.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got pictures of one of those being used as a doorstop.
Yep. It was the classic frame, the original 1984. This is a 1987 model, I think.
Remember what I...
Well, there you go.
Yeah. So, and
only 23 years.
Right. We used to have a collection of old... We used to have a collection of old crap in our old office, but we rented it a couple of months ago, so we emptied the basement out.
And that's
the
problem. We did that eight months ago. We emptied our storeroom at work and immediately needed some stuff.
Yep.
We were talking the other day about emptying it again, and I said, you know what that means? And everybody went, yeah, we know exactly what that means, but we got to do it.
Well, it's like me. I took some old parts, and I was just throw some stuff out because I was working on the motorcycle. And I was trying to think of, well, I've got all these wires that come to the battery. And I was thinking, you know, a harness would be nice where I could hook up four devices and just have one lead off of that going to a battery.
Yeah.
Go, wait a minute, I got it. I went to some of the old computers that were throwing out, and I pulled the male and female jacks off of them because there's four wires.
Yep.
So I put two of them together, and I shrunk wrap it so nothing they can't come loose. I left four wires on one end, nice and long, so I could crimp them. The other end, I brought four of them together with one heavier wire and a crimp so I could just hook it right up to the battery.
That's the way it works.
I made my own harnesses with old parts from computers.
Yep.
And you know what? Before, I was getting this tick, 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 tick static noise through the radio because of the connections of the battery.
Yeah.
Gone. Yep. I mean, here I'm using old computer parts on a Harley, and it worked great.
Yep. Well, now that goes back to what we were saying about the Bluetooth helmet. There are Bluetooth helmets that also connect to the radio. You don't have to connect them to your phone.
Right.
So that actually strikes me as something that's almost usable. The real problem becomes if you play your music too loud, you can't hear traffic noise, which is dangerous.
Well, that's why I like on mine, I've got the, when I go traveling, I have the XM radio. It's mounted on my handlebars, and it plays through the speakers on my Harley. So it's coming through, but I'm still aware of all the other traffic going around, people, and they hear my air horns when I jump on them for being on.
I'm thinking I should have air horns in my cube. They've got this anemic.
Oh, they would get that would be so cool. You could sit there. You can get them.
I know.
And him put them in, and it would scare the H out of folks.
Yeah, it will.
Where'd that come from?
I almost got creamed. They said this last week or the week before. This woman, I was driving in the right-hand lane. Mm-hmm. It wasn't my exit yet, but I was driving in the right-hand lane. And this woman way over in the left-hand lane, three lanes away, decided she needed to take that exit at that moment. Came across all three lanes of traffic. Of course, she's talking on her cell phone. On her right ear, so mm-hmm. she can't even yeah. see me. How she didn't get creamed before she got into my lane.
Well, she thinks she's
know.
Hiding it from the police.
Yeah.
By having it over this
Meanwhile,
year, they can't
see her girlfriend
it.
Is screaming at her. I'm laying on the horn, which is going, wah, 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 wah. So that didn't help any. She noticed me. I drove off onto the shoulders before she noticed me and swerved back into a lane.
And didn't turn.
No, she then cut off. She did one of those things where you cut over just after the exit and do this kind of swervy yeah. business up. Yep. Yeah, 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 yeah. If I were that girl riding with her, that would be the last time.
Oh, I'd be beating on her, yeah. throwing stuff at her.
Yeah, that would be the very last
slapping
time.
Slapping her silly.
With
her. I'd slap that phone right out of her hand.
Yep. Jeez. Maybe I need air horns.
That would be so cool.
It really would be pretty cool. It really would be pretty cool.
You just have a little button. Oh, like I say, that one girl, that one time I was going up Culver Road, it scared the heck out of her. But you know what?
Saved
her
life.
It woke her up to the fact, and it saved her from riding into me and another car.
Yep.
I mean, you know, it's like I posted on Facebook there, that one post that I created. Is a text worth dying over?
Right. The reality is, you know what? You want to kill yourself?
Do it.
Go for it. But just do it over a cliff. Don't take other people with you. I'm sorry, but that's the way it works. All right. Apparently, we're done for another week. There's 2 hours of your life you'll never get back. But we want to thank you for sharing it with us. And we will, of course, be back here next Saturday to talk about cars, car repair, and television shows, and maybe even some computer stuff. In the meantime, you've got George in to play the best German music in town. Linda is here to keep him under control so you can listen safely. No need to listen with your hand on the off button to your radio. She's there to control him. And we'll be back next week with the longest-running computer show in the known universe. For Dave Enright, for Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to Soundbites right here on the truly great member-supported, did you hear me say that? Member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you next week.